Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I am Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm good. Just let me wipe up these last few tears, and I'll be fine. We'll be able to talk.
Aw, sweet. You're so sweet, Matt. Allie Gertz is also joining us for her favorite episode. It's appropriate she's here.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely.
I think my cat is here, too.
I think we all have podcats. Matt, I heard Matt's podcat as we were getting ready. My kitties, I have two cats within a foot of me. So, yeah, I think that's very appropriate.
Perfect.
Before we get started, obviously, if you like the show, please rate, review, subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Really helps us out. Helps us new people find us. Tell your friends. Really appreciate it. Really helps us out. On to this week's episode. No further ado, Lisa's Substitute, episode 7F19, originally aired April 25th, 1991, written by John Vitti, directed by Rich Moore. Its original broadcast finished 43rd in the ratings, Nielsen rating 11.1, approximately 10 million viewing households, highest rated show on Fox that week. Did not get beaten out by Married with Children.
I would hope not.
There is no chalkboard gag. Too much content. The couch gag is there. The couch is missing, so they arrive and there is no couch.
It's a mystery.
Of course, this episode guest stars Dustin Hoffman playing Mr. Bergstrom. He was credited as Sam Edick.
That's so funny.
Yes, Semitic is he. One of the writers suggested that, and he thought it was funny, so he agreed to that. There was disputes about why he's not credited as himself. Some people say it was contractual obligations. Other people say it's because he wasn't sure if he wanted to be attached to a cartoon show. Regardless, it's Dustin Hoffman.
I'm pretty sure now he openly says, "Yeah, that was me."
Yeah, he's not. There's no shame. Onto the episode. It starts with Miss Hoover missing, quote unquote. The kids are unsure of what happened to her. They think she either, you know, fell down a well or drank drain cleaner, because that's what adults do.
I know I drink drain cleaner all the time as a mistake.
It explains your behavior sometimes, Matt. she finally does show up and explains that she'll be gone for a while because she has Lyme disease. With Skinner.
That's not cool. Yes. Ailment.
Yes. Skinner explains exactly what Lyme disease is. It includes spirochetes in your bloodstream, and eventually ending up in your brain. Miss Hoover is not too enthusiastic about that.
Oh God, the brain!
We do find out her first name is Elizabeth. I don't know if we've ever learned that before. I don't remember hearing it, but
nah.
Cut to Bart in his classroom. It's like a show and tell kind of scene where he is playing a video of Snowball 1 giving birth to kittens, including Snowball 2. The class isn't too excited about seeing that.
They're a little horrified, you know, they're kids.
I particularly enjoy it when he rewinds it and he shows them going back in.
Well, that's the cool part.
Yes, obviously.
Oh, I don't God. Think I realized that Snowball 1 and Snowball 2 were related.
Yeah,
I don't think he says they are. I kind of assumed. So maybe they're not.
Well, he says that's the one we kept.
Yeah.
He says it. I mean, they have a video of cats giving birth. I assume it's Snowball 1.
Yeah, unless they drove over to somebody's house and be like, here you go.
Yeah.
The videotape for cats.
Yeah, because Snowball 1 died. Right. And I just think, as someone who's had like 16 cats, that'd be super interesting. I like the idea that Snowball was just the mom. I just never had even considered it.
No, they never really spell it out. They just kind of, he says, I don't know, it's all very kept to infer things. But we cut back to Lisa's classroom, and Mr. Bergstrom bursts through the door, literally. And we have this whole clip. It's a delightful introduction to him as a character. And here it is.
Are you the substitute?
Yes, sir. Yes, I am.
Are you insane?
No, sir. No, I'm not. It's my way of getting their attention.
Well, all right. Play friendly with your new teacher, children.
Howdy. I am a Texas cowboy. The year is 1830. You youngins ask me any questions you like.
Can we play kickball instead of science after lunch?
Kickball? Son, there ain't no kickball in 1830. Any other questions? Shoot, it's awfully quiet on the plains here. Well, how about this? Everybody, I want to see two eyes on every single person staring right at me right now. There are three things wrong with my costume. Anybody names those three things will get my hat.
I believe I know the answer.
Well, what's your name?
Lisa Simpson.
Well, go ahead, Miss Simpson.
One, your belt buckle says State of Texas, but Texas wasn't a state until 1845.
Very good.
Two, the revolver wasn't invented until 1835.
That's excellent.
Three, you seem to be of the Jewish faith.
Are you sure I'm Jewish?
Or Italian.
I'm Jewish.
And there weren't any Jewish cowboys.
Very good. That's excellent. And I'm also wearing a digital watch, but I'll accept that. Here you go, little lady. And for the record, there were a few Jewish cowboys, ladies and gentlemen, big guys who were great shots and spent money freely. I'm Mr. Bergstrom. Feel free to make fun of my name if you want. Two suggestions are Mr. Nerdstrom and Mr. Boogerstrom.
So he comes in, guns a-blazing.
Being the most charming man in the world.
Yes, he is dressed up like a cowboy, has pop guns that are...
That totally would get him arrested today.
Yeah, that would. You'd probably get in trouble if you're a teacher and you were firing off even fake guns in a classroom. But 1991, a simpler time. We get a taste of what kind of teacher he is. He is, obviously, he wants to immerse the children and kind of teach them by showing. Like, here, look, this is, I'm dressed as a cowboy, trying to teach you a lesson about showing you what's actually wrong with this costume. And Lisa, of course, wins the prize, which is his hat.
Because she knows everything.
And yeah, she's taken by him right away. He is a teacher unlike she has seen before, from what we get from Springfield Elementary, generally.
It's like he actually cares about the kids.
Yes, he's interested in teaching these children. He cares about them. Lisa already sees, like, wow, a strong male role model that's smart, which she doesn't really have. And that is, it kind of sets a scene for this entire episode. I do enjoy the comment about Jewish cowboys. That's so good.
Yeah, and Mr. Bergstrom, he's not only just smart, he's just very empathetic and caring and appreciative of intelligence in other people, which I think is even more rare, because, you know, there are smart people in The Simpsons, like that Lisa interacts with, but they're a little cold, or they are like consumed by wealth, or something else is going on. So this is the first one that has like all the good characteristics.
That's true, and we actually do see that later on, much later on, with the Mensa episode, where they, her and all the other smart people in town run the town.
Right.
And, yeah, they don't have that empathy that we do see in Mr. Bergstrom. I mean, and he is the best teacher. He suggests, funny names that kids can make fun of him with, Nerdstrom and Boogerstrom.
Which is so self-aware. Like, it blows you away. Like, I feel like most people have had a crush on a teacher at some point. I don't know if that's at all stacked towards one gender over another.
I would, from my experience, no.
And, I feel like this is similar to crushes that I know people had at our school. Just whoever was like the kind of possible nerd in high school becomes the very charming and eclectic and likable adult who still wants to be around kids, which is just very sweet profession.
And rare.
Yeah, very rare.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's great.
Yeah, he is amazing. And Dustin Hoffman does just a great job with his performance. We'll probably mention it several times, but he brings his A game to Mr. Bergstrom. The B story we see is basically Bart and Martin, like, running against each other for class president. Martin gives his, like, opening remarks about having a science fiction library, the ABCs, with Asimov, Bester, and Clark.
But no, and Ray Bradbury.
No, yes. I am aware of his work.
That's one of my favorite lines of this whole episode as far as just jokes go. And I love how it just shows how nerdy the writers are, because I feel like so many people wouldn't get that joke, but it's still funny because of the way that they have Martin say that line, that we get what's happening there, even without knowing like who those people are.
Yeah, they're able to make the context really obvious so that, like you said, even if you don't know who those people are, it's still funny to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it speaks to Martin's character, like that he is more appreciative of Bestard than he is Bradbury. Mr. Bergstrom is singing Home on the Range, but at the same time, he is correcting the lyrics of the song, which are, very, I guess, idyllic, but not accurate. And it paints just, you get such an full portrayal of this character, and he's not even that present for maybe 5 minutes of screen time, and we kind of know who he is already. Bart is formally nominated for presidency by the twins, by Sherry and Terry. Kropel tries to get him away from it, but obviously it ends up failing. We cut back to Lisa in Mr. Bergstrom's classroom, and he's reading Charlotte's Web, as if this episode isn't sad enough already. We have poor Charlotte dying. Apparently, it's all they could spoiler alert. If you have not read Charlotte's Web and you're listening to this podcast...
Did you miss the third grade?
It might be. It's second grade or whatever? It's too late. It's too late. I'm sorry. You should go back and watch the animated movie. It's really good, too. But apparently, they couldn't read any more of it. That's all they could read without having some kind of dispute with the licensing or rights or something. Like, and they actually contacted E.B. White's... people. He tries to pull out the kids to show their talents, Mr. Bergstrom. And he's, he has, a lot of them are doing the very typical kid things, like touching their nose with their tongue or turning their eyelids inside out.
It's all they have. All they have is their bodies. So that's what they work with, what they got.
Does Ralph show his, or is that, I think that's on a different segment where he's talking to Ralph, but he tries to get Lisa to do something, and he sees that she has her saxophone with her, and she's like, no, I can't. She's obviously very embarrassed, very scared of performing in front of her classmates in such kind of intimate setting.
Yeah, because I was going to say, it's like, that's how we open the show, like every episode is her playing the sax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that I played an instrument in high school, and it kind of is... The setting does make a difference. It's weird.
Oh, totally. Yep.
It's like, I was in music class, and I was like, I'll just play, whatever, because everyone has an instrument, but when you're the only person, it's, I don't know, I understand her hesitation there.
It's like you're the guitar guy at the party.
I don't know. It's the guitar guy at the party, I think, has lack of awareness. I think that, at least that trope of the guitar guy at the party.
Well, she's worried about becoming the guitar guy at the party. Let's just put it that way.
But Mr. Bergstrom basically says, you owe me one. Like, I'll let it go. I understand. But you do owe me one. We get a reference to The Graduate, which if you don't haven't understood that it's actually Dustin Hoffman, at this point, hopefully you would, with Kerbopple trying to seduce him. I mean, they use every camera angle. I would hope that you would understand at this point that it's Dustin Hoffman. But Lisa, it ends the act, is playing her sax on the baseball field underneath his window, apparently for him, to show him, her ability.
I love how he claps for her, just saying thank you. This shows how aware he is, essentially.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, and that's another, just those little touches there really give kind of true insight to his character. And that's a commercial.
Really quick, what I was going to say is, like, I'm thinking about it, and for this episode to do kind of what it's doing, just as far as the plot goes, it doesn't really matter what Mr. Bergstrom is like. Like, all of this episode on the surface level is about is Lisa having her first crush on a teacher. And, like, we don't really need to see that he's this really amazing guy. We just need to see that Lisa's super into him. But the fact that it's Lisa and not Bart, or Milhouse, makes it that we really care about, like, who it is that she finds interesting. Like, what person on this earth could possibly appeal to Lisa? And that's why it's so gingerly and wonderfully done. And, like, I think it's why it's my favorite episode, is I love how much they respect Lisa, and that it's not someone who's just, you know, super good looking or just one thing. He's everything.
That's true. If they wanted someone really good looking, they just could have gone with one of the Corys.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I think we understand why Lisa likes him, because we all like him. He's an immensely likable person, and obviously cares and is smart, and, you know, is a great person, and we understand why Lisa would have a crush on him. And it's I think they made that clear so that her kind of struggle with her family and Homer and all that could come to the forefront more than not necessarily, you know, why she is attracted to him.
Absolutely. But anyway, when we come back from the commercial break, we see Marge and Lisa doing laundry together, and Lisa is essentially going on and on and on and on about how great Mr. Bergstrom is, and Marge, being the polite mother, is agreeing with her and saying, oh, yeah, I feel the way about your father. I feel that way about your father. Oh, I know those little things about your father, too. And Lisa, in this conversation that we're going to play for you in just a second, is just – she's like, Mom, we can't talk like this. But anyway, here's the clip.
When I fall asleep, Mr. Bergstrom is the last thing I think of, and he's my first thought when I wake up.
I feel that way about your father.
No, you don't understand. When Mr. Bergstrom smiles, you only see these teeth. But when you really make him laugh, you can see these two teeth. I think they're called the eye teeth. I don't know if he had orthodontic work or what, but they're absolutely perfect.
I notice little things about your father, too.
No, Mom, this is different. I mean, this man makes you feel like there's nobody better.
Your father does that to me.
Mom, are we going to talk or are we going
to
talk?
Lisa, we can talk, but first you have to accept the fact that I feel that way about your father.
Fine.
So once Lisa tells Marge that, this is different. It's not like you and Dad. Because she can't see her father that way. But Marge, being, you know, in love with Homer, just basically yells at Lisa and says, no, I feel that way about your father, and you have to accept that. And Lisa's like, fine, whatever. She's a kid, of course.
No, but she is coming to terms with her family. And that's really what a large section of this episode is about. It's about her understanding who her family is, that, and come to grips that she's going to be the smart one in her family, but she still has to accept them for what they are and not necessarily what she wants them to be.
Absolutely. It's actually funny because when they go upstairs, Hart and Homer hear her talking about Mr. Bergstrom and start laughing uncontrollably when she tells them about how he cried at the end of Charlotte's Web, because in their eyes, he was scared of the book. It's the only reason to cry at it.
Which only shows that they haven't read it.
Oh, of course not. Well, that or they're sociopaths and have no emotions. But, you know.
I don't think Homer or Bart have ever read Charlotte's Web. So.
Or any books they weren't forced to.
Yeah, I don't
think
they've ever read.
Yes, many books.
But anyway, we go back to school with Mr. Bergstrom and Lisa. And Mr. Bergstrom sends the kids off to recess. Tells them, hey, by the way, the museum's closing due to a lack of interest, so you should check it out this weekend. And then no one gets back in without a igneous rock and a sedimentary rock, which I hope there are a lot of rocks in their recess yard, because it seems to be hard to find both of those in the same place.
And for all those kids.
Yeah, they each have to start breaking rocks. He's trying to get them ready for a life of hard labor, essentially, to teach them how to break rocks. Because it's Springfield, of course.
Do people still have that job, Matt?
I don't know. I assume machines do it.
I think machines do it now.
Well, I'm saying is like if they ever go to jail, which, you know, it's Springfield, so half of them will probably end up in jail.
And people in jail still break rocks?
Probably. I mean, they need to make them do something. And there's not enough trash on the side of the road for them to pick up.
Okay.
But anyway, Mr. Bergstrom calls Lisa back and says, hey, you know, your homework is always so neat. Does your father help you? And Lisa, in an extremely blunt way, says no. And Mr. Bergstrom, trying to equivocate, is like, oh, you know, my father never. And Lisa abruptly cuts him off again and says, no. And he's befuddled at this. He says, well, you didn't let me finish. And Lisa says, oh, if the next word wasn't burp, you don't have to. And this kind of gives Mr. Bergstrom an eye on how Lisa sees her father. And I think she's just, he's taken aback that she has so little opinion of him.
She's, you know, I think that sight unseen, he would assume that her parents are relatively smart and are nurturing to her just because of how smart she is. And, you know, how she plays the saxophone very well, and she's obviously a very bright child. You would think, just assuming, that you would have parents that are similar.
Yeah, and I don't think that he's the kind of guy that, like, demands respect for your elders despite not being, you know,
worthy,
despite being kind of stupid. Like, I think he'd understand. Like, I don't think it has to do with the blatant low opinion or anything. I think it's just kind of like, oh, I am surprised. I didn't realize, I knew you were great. I didn't realize you were great by yourself.
Didn't realize you didn't have any help.
Yeah.
But then we cut to Martin and Bart giving speeches about their presidential candidacies. And Martin is, of course, trying to inflame the passions about how much asbestos there are and some obviously minuscule amount, parts per million or whatever. And Bart, not knowing at all what asbestos even is, starts screaming, "We need more asbestos," and actually leads the class in a chant, because that's what kids want, is more asbestos.
More asbestos.
They want lung cancer or mesothelioma.
Mesothelioma. Would not know the word except for all those infomercials.
Right. But then you see they actually go home, and Homer comes in to talk to Bart and says, "Oh, you're running for class president, hey?" And Bart just kind of blows it off. He's like, "Oh, it's just a popularity contest." And Homer just freaks out and is like, just a popularity contest? Popularity is everything. And I think here we get to see, you know, what's important to Homer, because Homer probably wasn't a very popular guy in high school. So he thinks that popularity is super important.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about, like, at least the way I see it. I kind of see it as that, like, he knows that Bart can't offer brains. He knows Bart doesn't have a talent. Like, he's trying to be supportive of kind of the only thing he has.
That's true.
And I think that's
very sweet.
And it does meet that, I guess, the expectation they eventually set up, where, you know, we see future Bart as a politician or a judge, like he's an elected official, like those weird Itchy and Scratchy movie. When he ends up being a Supreme Court justice and
Chief
Homer,
Justice, thank
Chief,
you,
Chief Justice. Excuse me. But you know, I think that is Bart's talent, and Homer sees it, and despite Lisa's kind of resentment towards Homer, he is trying. Obviously, we see him especially right at this moment with Bart, like, helping him out.
That's true. It's actually great, because once Homer establishes that with Bart, you get to a montage of them making posters for Bart's candidacy. And there's actually two. There's the sex one that everyone always remembers. It says, "Sex, now that they've got your attention, vote for Bart." I actually really like the one that Martin puts up as, "A vote for Bart is a vote for anarchy." And then you pan over to Bart and Milhouse putting up one that says the exact same thing, but messier. So they're definitely appealing to different demographics here. But then we actually see Bart tear down one of Martin's posters, wipe it on his butt, rip it up, and throw it into the air. And of course, all the kids cheer, and we pan up to Mr. Bergstrom and Lisa watching this. And Lisa quotes, I'm not sure who, but says, "You'll never go broke appealing to the lowest common denominator," which I'm sure every politician has said throughout time. And one of the great things is Mr. Bergstrom says, "You're going to miss your brother when you're gone." And he doesn't say when he's gone. He says when you're gone. When your life takes you places the rest of us could only dream of. And Lisa,
it's just a really big thing to say to someone that's that young.
Yeah, because it's obvious he sees the potential in her. And she says, "You mean places where my intelligence would be an asset and not a liability?" And it's like she doesn't, before this, she barely believed those places exist. But when Mr. Bergstrom tells her, "Yes, trust me," she tells him, "Oh, You know, I trust everything you say with your words, with your body language, and with your submitted good looks. And then they pan to the reaction shot of Mr. Bergstrom, and his eyes get big and wide, and I think he realizes for the first time just how she sees him. And he's a little taken aback by that.
I'm not sure if Lisa has ever had anyone tell her, like, in words, that she is going to be bigger and better than Springfield. I maybe Marge or Homer think it occasionally. They never necessarily tell her to her face, like, you are gonna leave this place and be something big. You're gonna make something of yourself.
It's also pretty early in the show, like, the idea of even looking outside of Springfield, outside of, like, you know, someplace like Shelbyville, is a pretty big concept. Like, the idea that this isn't just a contained show, and that these characters matter so much that they might even leave this show, I mean, we wouldn't have known at the time, is pretty impressive and pretty amazing.
Yeah, everything out of Springfield is kind of nebulous and far at this point. Like, we don't, of course, there's,
we don't even know where it is.
Yeah, we don't know where Springfield is. I mean, I think the few times they've shown Capital City, it's, you know, hundreds of miles away. Like, it's, Springfield is the universe, and everything outside of it is almost unknowable.
Have they even mentioned Shelbyville at this point?
No, I don't think so.
So at this point, it's Springfield in the middle of nowhere, and Capital City and the rest of the world really far away.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, so after this conversation with Lisa and Mr. Bergstrom, we cut back to the Simpsons house, and Marge basically blackmails Homer into taking Lisa to the Museum of Natural History. Homer, in what I believe is the first time he talks to his brain and his brain talks back, his brain tells him, you can get out of this if you were smarter, but you're not. So it sucks to be you.
Yeah, I think it is the first time. I don't think there's been any other occasions yet.
And it'll become a long-running gag that everyone loves.
Yeah.
So Homer, having failed and getting out of it, takes Lisa to the Museum of Natural History. And, of course, there's a suggested donation of $4.50, which, you know, that's cheap for museums anymore.
Yeah.
But Homer, he wants to clarify that the suggested donation means he could pay whatever he wants. He doesn't have to pay. And Homer, of course, seeing zero value in a museum, thinks, why would anybody pay for this? And when Mr. Bergstrom walks up and starts to pay, he rushes Mr. Bergstrom and says, oh, no, you don't have to pay for this. Mr. Bergstrom, being the incredibly classy guy that he is, says, oh, hi, Lisa, this must be your father. And Lisa just kind of rolls her eyes and looks a little annoyed.
Yeah, Lisa's embarrassed already.
Yeah, she's embarrassed.
Yeah. It starts early. And this leads to Mr. Bergstrom joining them throughout the museum. And basically, you don't hear the questions that Homer asks or the comments that he makes, but you hear Mr. Bergstrom's responses. And it basically makes out that Homer is asking really dumb questions, and Mr. Bergstrom is there correcting him throughout most of the time, but being a really nice guy about it. So it makes us like him, makes Homer like him, and just makes Lisa resent Homer more and more and more.
Even though Homer is, to be fair, trying.
He is. He does not want to be here, but he's trying to have fun. He's being a good dad about it, which is not something you see from Homer a whole lot. So, you know, he's trying to be a good guy. There's actually a point once they look at the T-Rex and the mummy where Lisa goes off on her own and Mr. Bergstrom talks to Homer and basically tells her that he thinks that Lisa has no strong male role model, or that Lisa feels that she doesn't have a strong male role model. And they have a little conversation where Homer is desperate and Mr. Bergstrom tells him, you have to be better than this. You have to try harder, which I think it's weird that Mr. Bergstrom even doesn't see how hard Homer's trying.
I think that, I don't know if Mr. Bergstrom necessarily is telling him you have to try harder, but you have to make Lisa feel like you're trying harder.
That's true.
I think that it's all about how Lisa sees him and not necessarily how he actually is behaving. I think Mr. Bergstrom is just like, Lisa doesn't see you as a strong male role model. You just, all you have to do is alter her perception, not necessarily try any harder than you are.
Good point. It's actually great because Homer asked Mr. Bergstrom to give her an A, and of course Mr. Bergstrom's like, oh, she's getting an A because she deserves it. And Homer says, yeah, but you know, don't tell her it was a favor to me. Pretend like she earned it. And of course, Lisa is earning it because she's a great student. And Homer's like, oh, you're smooth, I'll give you that. And then walks over to Lisa, and Lisa just looks at, who has overheard the tail end of this conversation, and just rolls her eyes at him and walks off.
Well, that also shows that Homer, unfortunately, doesn't realize even how she's doing in school, which is such a big part of who she is. But exactly. He's trying to do the good thing here. He's just so, you know, like unable to put this kind of effort or like see things, or he's just so baffled by someone who does well in school, given that he didn't do well and that Bart doesn't do well, that it maybe is a little weird for him.
Well, I think that's gets to a lot of what their differences are, is that Homer just cannot understand Lisa's point of view. Like, he was never the bright child. I mean, Lisa is a wunderkind. She's like a genius level intellect at 8 years old, and Homer is the complete opposite of that. And that's, I think, a lot of times we get, you know, we see Homer and Bart episodes, are they're more like brothers than they are father and son, because Homer may not like Bart's behavior sometimes, but he understands it.
Yeah, because they're kind of two peas in a pod, whereas Lisa, she's completely alien. And she actually, we find out later in Mother Simpson that she's a lot like Homer's mom. So I guess it skips generation.
Yeah.
Anyway, once they leave the museum, Lisa goes to Marge and asks her if she can invite Mr. Bergstrom to dinner. And Marge, being a great mom, says, yeah, sure. And then Lisa goes rapid fire questions at Marge about, oh, you know, can I wear a dress? Can I get my ears pierced? You know, can we have wine? Can I have wine? And Marge is very astute and keeps up with all of Lisa's questions. We fade off, and then we fade into her back at school, waiting outside the classroom door in her little bows and her dress, about to, just trying to come up with conversation piece starters about how to ask Mr. Bergstrom for dinner. And she goes through several, and it's just absolutely adorable, because we see Lisa being a typical little girl rather than the genius that she's often portrayed.
Yeah, it humanizes her. It makes us remember that, yeah, she's still eight, and it's very adorable, because it's this is the first time that she is basically asking someone out. Like, even though it's not really a that sort of relationship, it's still her. Like, she has that same kind of, you know, feeling. She has this crush on this teacher, and she's like, I want to ask him, and she doesn't know what she's rehearsing. And you see that scene a lot in movies and television, but it reminds us that Lisa is still just a child. She's a real person. She's not just an abstract intelligence.
Yep. But when she opens the door, she sees Mrs. Hoover, and she is erasing Mr. Bergstrom's name off of the chalkboard. And Lisa can only gasp. And we cut to a commercial.
Oh, no. Dramatic whisper. When we come back, we learn that Miss Hoover did not have Lyme disease.
She was crazy.
She was crazy, or she was faking it, but no, it's actually a little combination of the two. Apparently, she had a psychosomatic Lyme disease, which I guess is a thing.
Oh, yeah, lots of people have psychosomatic diseases.
Not what, Lyme disease?
Well, you know, maybe Lyme disease was big back then. Apparently, it was in all the newspapers and on all the news shows and magazines, so.
All those magazines about Lyme disease.
Yep.
Okay. But she's upset because Mr. Bergstrom didn't follow her lessons plans, which, yeah, I can't imagine what possibly could have been more worth teaching than Charlotte's Web and Jewish Cowboys. right. But she asked him, what did he teach you? And Lisa says that life is worth living.
Oh,
I know.
It's heartbreaking.
It is. We have the final statements of both Martin and Bart in their presidency.
Even though Martin looks like he's about to die.
Yeah, Martin, it definitely, I haven't read anywhere, but I'm fairly certain it was a reference to the Nixon-JFK debates, where JFK came off across as, you know, his suave, charming self, and Nixon came across as a sweaty, nervous weirdo. and that's what kind of Martin looks like. He is about to faint. Like, he looks very rough. And it looks pretty much like Bart has it in the bag. Like, there's no doubt that he's going to win. Lisa is trying to track down Mr. Bergstrom. She goes to the hotel he was staying at, which is called the Happy Gypsy, which is a pay-by-the-day hotel. generally not very good places to stay for any extended amount of time.
When you pay by the day, oh yeah.
There, she talks to a lady who's leaning out one of the windows, says he took his Copernicus costume. So you know he must be really leaving.
Exactly.
That's how you tell if he has the Copernicus costume gone. But this woman is also apparently been taken by Mr. Bergstrom.
That's true. They sigh together.
They sigh dreamily about their experience with him. Well, I mean, I can't blame them. I often sigh about Mr. Bergstrom.
I think we all do, thinking back on him.
But Martin and Bart are kind of making the final rounds in the playground. Bart has cupcakes handing them out, thanking people for their vote. No one has voted for him, it seems. Like he goes to Nelson and he goes to Milhouse, he goes to Lewis. None of them have voted. They ask him if he's voted for himself. He has not. That's kind of
voting's for losers, man.
Yeah, voting's for losers. They go back. They're running back to vote, but the bell rings, ending their opportunity. And we find out Martin has won with 2 votes, 2-0. Bart demands a recount. Krabappel happily agrees, counts the 2 votes again. 1 for Barton, 2 for Martin. And Martin wins. He holds up a newspaper, which is a reference to the famous Dewey Defeats Truman newspaper. Back when Truman actually ended up winning the election. At this point, we cut to the train station where Lisa has finally tracked down Mr. Bergstrom. We have pulled this clip. It is amazing and sad and hopeful and lovely. Here it is.
Now boarding on track 5, the afternoon delight, stopping at Shelbyville.
Hey, Mr. Bergstrom!
Hey! Lisa!
Hey, Lisa, indeed!
What? What is it?
Oh, I mean, were you just gonna leave just like that?
Oh, I'm sorry, Lisa. You know, it's the life of the substitute teacher. He's a fraud. Today he might be wearing gym shorts. Tomorrow he's speaking French or pretending to know how to run a bandsaw or God knows what.
You can't go. You're the best teacher I'll ever have.
Oh, that's not true. Other teachers will come along.
Oh, please.
No, I can't lie to you. I am the best. But, you know, they need me over in the projects of Capital City.
But I need you too.
That's the problem with being middle class. Anybody who really cares will abandon you for those who need it more.
I understand. Mr. Bergstrom, I'm gonna miss you.
I'll tell you what. Whenever you feel like you're alone and there's nobody you can rely on, this is all you need to know.
Thank you, Mr. Bergstrom.
All aboard.
So, I guess this is it. If you don't mind, I'll just run alongside the train as it speeds you from my life.
Goodbye, Lisa, honey. It'll be okay. Just read the note.
So, wow, what a scene!
Yeah,
this whole thing is amazing. We get Lisa totally upset, you know, that Mr. Bergstrom is leaving her. You know, I love his quote. I can't lie to you. She's like, you're the best. He's like, he tries to play humble for a second. He's like, no, I can't lie to you. I am the best. But he talks about the quote about. If you know, being the worst thing about being middle class is that everyone who loves you, everyone who cares, will end up leaving you for someone who needs you more. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, there's the note that he hands Lisa. Which simply says, "You are Lisa Simpson," which is
It's
my favorite moment in maybe anything, like TV or movies or my own life. It is just so perfect. And what I love about this is that he didn't say you are special or you are great. Like he said something that, you know, really demands that Lisa realize how amazing and smart and funny she is, and that although this is the first person that's really seen her for who she is, there will be others. It might just be a little while in between them, but I love it.
Yeah, and it's a promise. It's a, that note is so many things. It's a promise. It's like a reminder. The scene works on so many, like, it's such a very, very sad scene in some ways, but in some ways it's very joyful and hopeful, because she is seeing someone she loves leaving her life forever, but at the same time she's getting this kind of like a booster. I don't know, like it's telling her that regardless, you are you. And no one can take that away from you, regardless of any situation.
And this is going to change her life forever. Like, this is, you are Lisa Simpson. Lisa is the same Simpson who will eventually become a vegetarian when it's not at all popular like it is today. And it's actually very controversial, and will go to Washington and all these different things. And like, I'm sure she would have done all that stuff without it, but you never know. And it's pretty remarkable, like, the influence that a teacher could have on you, but especially someone like Mr. Bergstrom. But more importantly, that she's able to actually, like, find that in herself with a little guidance.
Yeah, it's like she self-actualizes.
Totally.
To a certain extent. This is a thing I found out through the wiki. John Vitti, the writer, he is still full of regret that the note was originally, he says, supposed to have an exclamation point. Which I don't see it. Like,
it takes everything away from it.
That's like, it's too hyperbolic.
That's putting a smiley face at the end of it.
It doesn't,
or like a thumbs up sticker.
The understated nature of the note, I think, blesses more.
It's like, when it's a statement, it's basically him saying, this is obvious to everyone. If an exclamation point, he was shouting, like, people need to know. But with just the period, it's so understated and subtle, and it's exactly the kind of thing Mr. Bergstrom would say or would do. That's the kind of tone he would take if he were actually saying it. So with the exclamation point, just no.
No, I
do. We know what his reasoning was?
No, he doesn't say it. It's very briefly mentioned on the wiki. And apparently it was just he tweeted it out one day. Maybe someone asked him about it. He didn't catch it in the animatic, and still haunts him to this day.
And he's not joking. That's so crazy.
I'm reading the tweet. That is all it says.
Oh my god, that's so crazy.
And a lot of people disagreeing with him on Twitter. and the fact that the fact that Lisa runs along with the train, was it to watch as you are sped away from my life? The fact that she mentions the fact that it's such like a trope, but then does it anyway.
Yeah,
and like that self awareness is already there.
So smart.
In both Lisa and the show, if the fact she didn't point that out, I think that it could be viewed as more tropey than it is, even though it's still a very, heartfelt, tender moment. But the fact that she sees it and says it and doesn't care because that is a true feeling within her, this whole scene. Oh my god.
Yeah.
In our show notes, this is what I wrote. The note, my feels. Mr. Bergstrom speeds away on the train. Lisa is back with her family, obviously despondent. She has the note, and she does still have that. She has what Mr. Bergstrom basically gave her, but she still misses him, and it doesn't take that away. And you know, Homer is kind of blasé about it.
Well, he's still upset that Bart didn't get a single vote. I mean.
I guess so. But Lisa, at this point, just has had enough. Like, her sadness, and she basically just goes off on Homer, right at the table. She says, I'm glad I'm not crying, because then you could confuse this with me being upset. and she calls him a baboon. You, sir, are a baboon. And Homer is taken aback. He is very upset. He's like, I don't think you know what you're saying. And then she just yells baboon at him.
Because he can't think of anything he's done wrong. Like, he just took her to the museum. He's been very supportive of Bart and Lisa in the ways he knows how. Like, what he's getting in trouble for is just being himself. And that's really hard.
Yeah. He's caught in between. I'm not a parent, but I can imagine. Like, and Marge even kind of points this out, is like, you can't be the one to be upset right now.
You're not allowed to have hurt feelings.
Yeah, your little girl is very upset, and you know she's alone in that room. You have to go. You have to go fix this. You have to go. Settle her. You know, calm her down. Make her believe in her father.
I love that line, and I love Marge for saying that.
Yeah, and I do want to point out we've mentioned Dustin Hoffman's performance, but Yeardley Smith.
Oh yeah,
does an amazing. I mean, she's always great, but this performance, when this Lisa episode among the best episodes of the show, and she even Yeardley's even pointed out how being in the same room with Dustin Hoffman for just a day taught her a lot about acting, but like you can hear just that emotion just pour out of her in what a scene when we hear a little 8-year-old girl call her father baboon could very easily, like, the temperament in her voice really delivers that anger she has and the disappointment she feels in her father. Homer, he's upset, but he goes upstairs to talk to Lisa, and she's kind of despondent, has a sign on her door, says, go away, which I think every child has once. Yep. If they've ever had their own room, they have a sign on the door that says, go away.
Or electrify the door.
Well, we're not all mad scientists like you, Matt.
Wow.
But she's, obviously very upset, crying. Homer, he basically lays out what we've said already, is that it's hard for me to understand you and understand what you're feeling, because everyone I care about is still in my life. We haven't really covered, again, Mona Simpson, Matt mentioned earlier, so I guess they couldn't really call upon that because that kind of lore hadn't been established. But still, right. Homer is trying to connect with her at a very... He understands that he's not as smart as her, and he'll never be as smart as her, and that he can't understand her through that way, but he can try and connect to her on an emotional level. And eventually he makes her, starts acting like a monkey, like literally. And and she starts laughing. She cracks a smile. And at that point, I think the war is over. And it's amazing what a little, and I think that's what Homer has figured out, in that, he can always make her laugh. And connect to her, at least maybe not intellectually, but emotionally.
Yeah, and Lisa gets to be a little girl here. She just went through a pretty life-changing experience where she was very adult in a lot of ways and is realizing her potential for when she actually is an adult. And it's nice that we still get to let her be just a kid, just an 8-year-old who loves her dad despite or because of his many faults.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Homer at this point moves on to Bart, and Bart is upset because he lost. He lost the election. Homer can get to Bart much quicker than he can get to Lisa. Like, he understands very quickly how to appeal to Bart, and he's like, "Well, did you really want to be president?" Bart's like, "Nah, not really. I didn't really care." And is it going to give you more work? He's like, "Yeah, probably." Then why does it matter? Who cares? Let Martin be president.
Everyone knows you're the popular one. That was the important part.
Yeah, exactly. You've already won the battle, and it doesn't threaten you as a person. You're still you. You're still Bart. And he's like, "Yeah, thanks." And finally, we see him walk past Maggie's room, and it's dark, and she's in her crib, like trying to sleep, and she's kind of, making kind of distressed noises in her sleep because she's lost her pacifier sometime in the night. And he walks over, gives her a pacifier, and she's satisfied and kind of rolls over back to sleep. And finally he goes downstairs, and Marge is still alarmed. She's like, "Is everything okay? You know, is everyone all right?" And he's like, "Yeah, Marge, let's go upstairs. As I am on the roll of my life." And yeah, it's a very sweet way to end a very, very sweet episode. I can't. It's so good.
Yeah. It's a perfect balance of an episode. You've got funny things with the Bart subplot, and you've got the feels that Mr. Bergstrom and Lisa just give off, that basically they provide a great balance. It's incredibly paced. Overall, it is basically what makes a great Simpsons episode.
A great TV episode, even.
True.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if there's a certain turning point where The Simpsons isn't just, you know, early Simpsons anymore, and it becomes The Simpsons we kind of know. I don't know if there's a specific spot, but this is certainly a definitely highlight of the second season where it sees, well, like, this is, here we can see the potential of this show, like, the best it can do. Like, look how much it can do with an animated show in prime time. Whew.
I think we're all spent.
Yeah, exactly. Before we move on, I do want to mention that we are going to be starting a new segment soon called My Favorite Episode. This is Allie's favorite.
Yes, it is.
Yes, and I thought it'd be appropriate to at least introduce it here. I want you guys to, as we are covering the episodes, as you can look at the schedule and see where we are. We're just about to finish up season two, move into season three. If any particular episode upcoming is your favorite, just write us an email explaining why. It's at SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com with the title My Favorite Episode. And we will, at this point in the show, we'll be reading them. I'm really interested to, because that's, I think, a thing about, like, Simpsons fans is, like, almost always the first question is, like, what's your favorite episode? And there's almost, like, it's very hard to have a wrong answer.
Mm-hmm.
And it tells you a lot about that person and what they think about, like, how they view the show and what they like about the show. And, like, because there's so much in The Simpsons, there's so much stuff it's not just only funny. It's not just only really smart. It's not just really only emotionally and touching. It's like it has everything in it. And, like, every single person has a little different thing they like the most. And obviously we're only two guys, and, you know, we have Allie on once in a while, and this is her favorite. I'd like to hear from you guys. So please, it doesn't matter how far in advance we are. If your favorite episode is season 7 or 10 or whatever, send it in. I will put it in the lockbox and pull it out in when it's appropriate. Next up, we'll move on to comments from the news group. This is the alt.tv.simpsons news group. It's archived on Google Groups. You guys can find it and look at it if you would like to. I generally look for that the week or two after the show's aired and see what's up. A lot of confusion about who Sam Edick is. Some people don't realize, like, the news was carrying, like, TV Guide, I think, even said, it's Dustin Hoffman. But some people weren't trusting it, and they thought it was a joke that it wasn't Dustin Hoffman. And, like, some people were even clearly stated, no, that's not Dustin Hoffman. And then people were like, what about that graduate whole thing? Like, that, it has to be Dustin Hoffman, right? But, yeah, a lot of confusion about that. Also, especially of interest to you, Allie, with Fire Talk With Me, is apparently in Hong Kong, the billboards on all the taxi cabs have Joan Chen, who was in Twin Peaks at the time, and on one side, and Bart Simpson on the other side.
I want to see that so bad.
It's very interesting. Yeah, it's such a strange dichotomy in Hong Kong. At the same time, it's hard to think that, you know, they're such very iconic shows for very different reasons, and it's, I guess, at the core, they're the same reasons. Memorable.
Yeah, and Simpsons writers are big fans of Twin Peaks.
Yeah. You know, I don't... This is a very strange thing that always pops up when I'm watching Twin Peaks, and that intro comes up with that weird twangy guitar.
Yeah.
Apparently, have you ever seen the movie Broken Arrow?
I have not.
Yes.
With Christian Slater and John Travolta. It is a bad movie.
Yeah, it does.
The soundtrack is almost exactly the same. They use that weird Twin Peaks twangy guitar the entire time. I don't know. I always wanted to mention you just because it's so strange. But that's about it. Listener question of the week is, what is your favorite grandpa episode and why? Great responses. I love you guys. You always come out with great answers and a good variety of answers. Stuff I don't expect. That's kind of loophole material sometimes. I generally am very... I allow a lot of kind of maybe one-off answers that aren't necessarily actually grandpa episodes, but I like the answers anyway. But first off, we have The Wanking Dead at FF Connoisseur 84. Raging Abe Simpson and his grumbling grandson, etc. We see Abe as a total badass, and he's not always making up stories. It's a funny story, a lot of heart, as we see Bart and Abe get closer and Bart develop respect for him. JWK, Jonathan Camp. Not sure if this counts, but the love Matt at grandpa from the spinoff show, the Moe and Abe pairing actually works very well. And that's one of those cases where I'm like, well, it's not actually an episode, but I like it. It's fun. Amanda, drawn to insanity. Grandpa versus sexual inadequacy. Admitting Homer was a mistake and the truth about the Rand Corporation explains so much. Danny at Woosh Danny H. There's been a great grandpa episodes, but there's no way you can't mention his most memorable moment in a link to the a gif from Bart After Dark with grandpa walking into the burlesque house, seeing Bart, and quickly walking out. Mike Bloom at a Mike Bloom type. The old man in the key to finally give some context about both Branson and Bronson, Missouri. You get to hear Hank Azaria's Charles Bronson voice. Chris, the great money caper. They used to call me Grifty McGriff. I wrote the book on Flim Flamin'. Thomas, for me, Grandpa versus Sexual Inadequacy has always been a favorite. Not only get a randier side to him, what's so unappealing about hearing your elderly father talk about sex? I had sex. We had such great moments, such as him shoving flowers through the mail slot. It's a great bonding episode between him and Homer. Finally, Jordan. For me, it's got to be Homer Simpson in kidney trouble. Grandpa drinks one too many sarsaparillas. Can't get a good one in Springfield since they angry up the blood. Needs a kidney from his son on land. His name was Homer Simpson. It's always been a favorite grandpa episode of mine because of their father-son dynamic. And one of the favorite quotes of the show, I stole this accordion from a blind monkey, but you disgust even me. Matt, what's your favorite grandpa episode?
Oh, this is an easy one. The grandpa, the flying hellfish and his grumbling grandson. I can't remember the whole title, but that is just a fantastic episode where you get to see grandpa, like I said, be a badass, and you realize that before he got old, grandpa was pretty cool. He wasn't the smartest, you know, whatever, but he was pretty cool. And you get to see Bart. It's funny because it's kind of like we said before that Homer and Bart tend to have a older brother, little brother relationship more so than father. And in that episode, it's kind of like grandpa is also taking on that older brother role of the cool guy who does all the fun stuff you want. And at the end, you actually see Bart start to respect grandpa a little bit.
Yeah, he gains respect for him. I think it's the same kind of thing where we see a lot of sometimes Bart episodes where he's gaining respect for Homer. And the same thing, he gains respect for grandpa. He sees that he used to be a really cool guy. Allie, what's your favorite?
Mine is Grandpa versus Sexual Inadequacy. If only for the sweet dad stuff that I love so much in The Simpsons. But I love the Santa realization. Homer is just like, where were you when I was growing up? You weren't even there when I, got to meet Santa Claus on Christmas morning. And then he lights the match and realizes that was Abe. And it's just this really sweet, tender moment. Yeah, that then leads to a house fire.
Yes. Share a moment of stop, dropping, and rolling.
Yeah.
mine is, I share with Matt. Grandpa Abe Simpson, Raging Abe Simpson, his grumbling grandson, and the blah, 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 fighting fellow. Yeah. The hellfish. It's, everything Matt said, I echo. If I ever pull the trigger on a Simpsons tattoo, I may be getting the hellfish tattoo. I don't know. It's either that or Kirk Van Houten's picture painting drawing of Dignity. I mean, what was I going to say? Oh, next week's question is, what's the most heartbreaking moment from The Simpsons? There's a lot of candidates. This is one I'm going to have to ponder over.
At least this isn't a Futurama podcast, because that would be easy.
You're going to say Jurassic Bark, aren't you?
Of course I am. Although I wouldn't say the name, because we don't speak that name.
We don't?
I certainly try not to think about it or talk about it or anything.
I know, it's, every time I watch it, I think it's more kind of manipulative. But this is not a Futurama podcast.
I mean, wait, what are you guys saying about it?
No, the Jurassic Park episode of Futurama, you know, where the...
No, of course. It's,
yeah, yeah. I don't know. I just... It feels very much... Like, when you first watch it, yes, it's like, oh my god, I'm so sad. Like, that poor dog. But every time I rewatch it, it just feels...
It's based on a true story.
Okay, well, that makes me turn the other way again on it.
Yeah, it's based on a true story from a long time ago. I think it might have been in China. But there's actually a statue of the dog that it's based on where it did the exact same thing. It went to the train tracks every day until it died like 8 or 10 years later.
Oh my god, now I'm getting sad again.
Yeah, it's a real story. You should read up on it, because it's even more touching when you realize that it's an homage to something that really happened.
Oh.
Now you broke Robbie. Way to go.
Now I'm sad. Yes, next week's question is most heartbreaking moment. I will post it on our social media. It's, let's see, Twitter at Simpsons Show Pod. Follow us there. Facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod. And you can email me. I've already mentioned SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. Finally, this segment we end every show with.
And the easiest one ever.
I don't know. That first episode was pretty easy, Matt.
That's true.
but yes, it is time for best episode ever.
Best episode ever.
Best episode ever is where we rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. Yeah, I don't think there's any debate among us. I was entertaining it, the thought, as I was going into watching the show, but after I watched it, I'm like, no, it's clear. This is number one. It's number one with a bullet.
Oh yeah, easily.
It's great. It's such a good episode. It has so much. It's. I mean, everyone talks about it as being, you know, the very touching episode about Lisa, but it's funny too. There's a lot of jokes in it, and Dustin Hoffman's performance is unbelievable. Everyone steps up their game. It's a great episode from top to bottom. So new number one. Lisa's
substitute. Yeah, I also think it's going to stay number one for a while.
Yeah, it is going to be facing, over the couple next seasons, really tough competition.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to get really fun. Season 3 is so insanely good that it's painful, and I think then it will get rocked. But at least for the rest of the season, I think that this is going to stay there.
Yeah, I don't think anything the rest of the season will take it out.
No, there's no way. No, but anyway, I don't want to spoil.
No, nah, well, there's we don't. Sometimes we think things are better, but then we watch them like, no, it's not really that great. But, you know, it's not as good as we remember it. I don't know. Michael Jackson, the Stark Raving Dad, starts off season 3.
Stark Raving Dad.
Yeah. Oof, it's really good. I know that.
Yeah, I don't. In season 3, I look forward to the Homer Alone and Bart the Lover.
Oh, yes, yeah. Very good.
Can't forget Homer at the Bat either.
Oh, Homer the Bat. I loved baseball when I was a kid. I loved all those players. And half of them are awful people now. But anyway, you can find this list, best episode ever, at our website, thesimpsonsshow.com. Very simple. Also links to all our new episodes. You can download, stream them. Links to our Facebook, our Twitter, RSS feed. You can contact us through the website as well, and donate to the show if you'd like. We have a few rewards posted if you'd like to contribute. We'd really appreciate that, of course. Before we go, I'm on Twitter at MixmasterCereal. It's MixmasterCereal. You can also check out my comic book podcast. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour. HandsomeBoysComicsHour.com. Allie, plug all you got. All that stuff.
My Twitter is Allie Gertz, AlLieGoertz. And you could go to my website for any kind of updates on shows or anything that I'm working on YouTube, AllieGertz.com. And in the not too distant future, I will have a podcast called Everything's Coming Up Podcast, which to no one's surprise, is also about The Simpsons.
Yes. Not enough. The world cannot have enough Simpsons podcasts.
So true.
There's not enough room in the potosphere for all the Simpsons podcasts that should exist. I do want to mention, please, guys, go. Allie has been a trooper. We have had some behind the scenes technical difficulties, and she has gone well above the call of duty for us. So please check her out. Her music's great. I bought her album, and you guys should as well. It's really good music, not to mention from a great person. So
thank you, and you could be a part of history because it is a retired band name that I will never use again.
Yeah, no, God, that's so.
Yes,
yes, exactly. But with that,
but thank you very much. It's very sweet of you.
No, of course. And Matt does not participate in social media. You will not find him.
That's true. But if you can teach tricks to all these stray cats in Orlando, I will get the message eventually. They all talk, and we know lots of them.
And that is not a hyperbole, guys. I want you to understand that. I have been to Matt's house.
We only feed like 7 or 8 of them, all right?
Yeah, and they all have names. Even though they don't let you pet them. But regardless, I think we can call it a day. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching The Simpsons.